State Representative Bill Otto has emerged victorious in two tough election cycles, and now he's facing his biggest challenge yet, unseating Congresswoman Ann Wagner. The Democratic State Representative joins us next on another edition of Politically Speaking.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I think that is fair to say.
As I say, hands to kiss and babies to shake. But
I think my record speaks for itself.
That's a really good question.
Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in our studios in St. Louis is...
colleague Joe Manis.
And our special guest today...
Bill Otto, Democratic candidate for 2nd District Congressional Office.
And a state representative?
State representative for the 70th House District.
Welcome to the show. You're a first-timer. I'm sure you're hoping that you're a second-timer after November.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I certainly appreciate it.
So before we get into your congressional race, tell us a little bit about yourself, your professional experience, your political experience
sure.
We'll get to, and any other things we need to know about Bill Otto.
Well, we'll start from the beginning and go back a little bit. I've spent the last 4 years representing some pretty amazing people in St. Louis County, St. Charles County, in a very, very odd district that slipped between two counties by river.
Tell us what your district encompasses, because it is one of the strangest districts in Missouri, without any hyperbole.
Especially in a metropolitan area. The district is sort of a river district. Geographically, it's the largest district around because it includes all of the river, but it's Hazelwood. It's a river district west of Highway 270, Hazelwood, Bridgeton, Maryland Heights, Chesterfield, and directly west of Chesterfield across the river is a portion of St. Charles County.
And you live in Maryland Heights?
I live in Maryland Heights,
okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And just for our listeners, as I told the representative before the show, my grandfather actually lived in your district before he passed away. The border of your district is... his cul-de-sac.
Right.
It was fascinating to look at that on a map.
If you look at the precincts and the roads and it is a very odd district. I think a lot of them are. The crossing the river where you can't drive from one portion of the district and stay in it to the other one. And it goes along the river. I've got a portion of St. Charles City, mm-hmm. which is unusual, and I'm the only I'm a trivia question in Jeff City. I'm the only non-statewide representative that has two casinos in his district.
Congratulations for that.
Okay,
for whatever that's worth.
Now, tell us a little bit about me. Like, where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in North St. Louis County.
Okay. What high school?
Well, this is an interesting part of my life.
Okay.
I grew up in Berkeley. Supposed to graduate from high school in 1974. I was in what I've also quite often described as a tough household.
Okay.
I never met my father. Didn't meet my father. In fact, until I was almost about to join the Navy, and I saw my mother on very, very irregular basis.
Okay.
Just sort of an odd thing. Lived with my grandmother quite a bit, but being my mother's mother, she was not very happy about who I look like and what she saw in me of my father. It was an abusive house.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Well, it sort of makes you into what you are. At 15, my mother died. And then at that point, the authorities realized that I was not going to be able to stay in my grandmother's house. And I ended up in a boys' home in Brentwood, Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I officially attended high school. Went there for actually only all of my 10th grade year and part of 11th grade. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand in the state of Missouri, the legal age is 17. So in 1972, without any place for them to put me or any programs in place, I was taken out of the boys' home and put on the street. So the story of my life back then was at 17 years old, I was basically homeless. No real place to go, no home, no family. It was a tough situation for a while, but I absolutely credit my success of moving forward and being successful in any aspect of life is the teachers that took some notice of me. Brentwood teachers, before that, when I went to the Berkeley school system through junior high, and those teachers knew what was going on with me at the house, and they were very supportive. But the folks in Brentwood High School, the teachers there noticed me, paid attention, tried to help me. They knew Brentwood School District's very small. Mm-hmm. So the teachers knew about the boys' home, and they helped me get along. And then when I ended up on the streets, the first person I lived with any length of time was a counselor from high school who had a son older than I was and younger, and let me stay at her house for a while. I got my feet on the ground. Teachers helped me get my GED. They helped me get into college. There was a scholarship program back there called vocational rehabilitation for folks that needed, I guess, rehabilitating. Maybe I did. And managed to go to Merrimack Junior College back then. And I really credit a lot of my success for teachers that took a little extra time and paid attention to me and kind of pushed me a little bit to get my GED, to start college, helped me actually get Social Security at one point after my mother died. So interesting start to life. I spent a couple of years at Merrimack, went to UMSL for a semester, didn't really feel like I was making any progress to determine who I was, and joined the Navy. Joined the Navy in 1976 and spent 7 years there. And that's where they taught me my profession. I'm an air traffic controller by trade. Worked at Lambert for 20 years and retired a few years ago.
So you were at Lambert during some pretty dramatic times.
I say this as a joke. I was at Lambert when they had airplanes. Yes, yes. I was there. I got there in 1986. It was the sixth busiest airport in the country. Very challenging. Very, very fit my personality. Just great. I'm probably considered a Type A personality. The job was great. It was just an exciting time in Lambert's history.
And did you do that? How many years were you an air traffic controller for?
31 years.
31 years. And then were you in local politics while you were an air traffic controller?
Well, firstly, I thought you were going to ask me is where I was in the 1981 strike.
Well, I know that, where I was. I was actually covering it. I was in the Washington Bureau of the Post-Dispatch. I'd just been there a few months, and I remember going to, permanently, and I remember going to the PATCO press conferences.
Uh-huh. Well, I was in the Navy at the time. I was up at up in the Seattle area.
Okay.
I was in the service and ended up working in the Seattle area at an FAA facility after the strike for a bit. Yeah. But no, I was in the service. Otherwise, I'd have probably been a fired air traffic controller with the rest of them.
Before you were a state representative, I believe you were in local government. Is that correct?
I've always been involved somehow in the community. I just think it's important. It's an example for my children, but it's part of what I am. And I moved to Bridgeton in 1986 when I came back here. I'm also a guy that likes to live close to work, so it's 3.6 miles to work.
That's
in the morning
true.
For me. Just got involved in the community, was on committees, on some of the commissions, and ended up running for city council in Bridgeton in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And, Joe, you might remember this date because on August 26th of 1989 is when the airport announced its expansion westbound into Bridgeton.
Yes, I remember that very clearly.
So I turned in to be a relatively popular council person because I understood the technical end of what they were proposing.
Mm-hmm.
And the first proposal, F4, was a disaster, just absolutely disaster technically. And, of course, remember, it didn't last very long.
Correct.
They ended up going somewhere else and eventually taking out my home and my community.
Really? Like your actual
home? Yeah, my home.
Yeah, so yeah. And I remember when I was covering the governor's race in 92, Vince Schemel was one of the candidates, and Bridgeton residents who were really angry with how this thing turned out picketed him everywhere.
Right.
I mean, they were one of the contributing factors.
I was going to say that was probably one of the reasons he was decimated by Mel Carnahan and didn't even do very well in the St. Louis area, I would imagine.
Yes.
But I'm sure there were other reasons too.
Yeah, but that didn't help because they used to show they were very organized.
It was the old Bridge and Air Defense, which is a fascinating community organization, especially since now I am so heavily involved with Just Moms organization. Mm-hmm. Around the Bridge and Landfill.
Yeah, it was pretty funny because they were known as BAD for short.
Bridge and Air Defense. Yes, absolutely.
So in 2012, this district was created by redistricting. I don't even know if there was an incumbent when the seat came up, but you ran for that seat. I think you were unopposed. There was a Republican primary, And it is really like one of the most competitive state representative districts in the state, definitely in the St. Louis area. So tell me a little bit about that experience and 2014, because that was also a competitive race for you. And it's kind of a sign that you have experience running in very competitive races and winning, basically.
But it really fits my personality. I feel like to represent folks, to stand up for them in any sort of an entity, you need to meet them. You need to be at the doors. And I would prefer to have a competitive district where folks ask real questions about real issues. And it absolutely fits who I am and how I see politics. If we're that, but I also think that it's about public service. Mm-hmm. I think the commissions that I've been on boards from St. Peter's to Bridgeton and Pattonville and on all of that, I want a district that'll ask me questions, a community that's involved. This district was great for me. I was councilman in Bridgeton, worked a lot with the Pattonville School District where my boys went to school. My wife went to school there. A lot of connections. Maryland Heights is a gem in St. Louis County. Just one of those great communities. The competitiveness of the district is fascinating because we'll get to some areas that are very progressive, very democratic, and then we move into areas across the river into St. Charles County where I am literally dismissed because of the party I'm in, not the job I do.
Right.
So
So what made you decide with all this to run for Congress?
Well, I two reasons, and it really started with the Bridgeton landfill, the problems there. That started in January of 13, almost right after I got inaugurated.
Is that in your district?
It is in the district, yes. It is completely within the House district, and the bulk of it is in the congressional district as well.
Right.
But it's one of those things that it was also in my city council district, you can believe that, in the early 90s. But it is one of those issues that has to be solved at the federal level. It's one of those things that I was shocked that it has been ignored for so long. It continues to be ignored. My opponent, Ann Wagner, virtually did nothing with it until I think she realized she was going to have an opponent in this race. Finally got a bill filed, a bill that sailed through the Senate, no problem. Didn't even get a hearing on this bill until the day before the 7-week vacation that they took. So that's a big part of it. The other part is I simply don't think that the views from my opponent fit the district. I think that the district is much more progressive. I think they support women's rights. I think they support reasonable background checks for gun purchases. I think the district is diametrically different than how it's being represented in Washington, D.C.
It's interesting. This district it's Republican-leaning, but it's not super Republican-leaning.
No, it used to be, I mean, just for our listeners, the second district used to be much more Republican than it is now. And it changed somewhat when the St. Louis area, in effect, lost a congressional seat after the 2010 census, without belaboring the point. But the bottom line is the second ended up taking a part of the old third, which had been at one time Dick Gephardt's district.
So that includes parts of Jefferson County, pretty much all of South St. Louis County, and I guess western and some parts of central St. Louis County, and then parts of St. Charles County.
That's a perfect description.
And
absolutely.
There are some Democratic areas of that. South County leans Democratic, although it can be swing in certain times. Jefferson County is historically Democratic, but has been moving more Republican. St. Charles, parts of St. Charles are more Democratic than others, although it's Republican-leaning.
Sure.
And obviously, western and central St. Louis County tend to be Republican-leaning. So it's a—
Well, it depends.
Depends on the place. Obviously, you represent part of western St. Louis County that is more Democratic-leaning than, say, you know, the Eureka Wildwood area, which tends to be Republican.
Yeah, and I live in Webster Groves, which has increasingly become Democratic.
So,
I guess I see it rather than we always divided on party lines of conservative, progressive, and all those things. I think it's a district that would like to be represented more middle ground. I don't think that it's not the old Todd Akin district, which is what the second district was, and that went all the way out to Lincoln County. I think there are issues that are being ignored for the district. I think there are folks that are passionate about issues that simply don't get any thought or play in Washington, D.C.
So before we go into issues, I want to ask you kind of the political machinations of this. I looked at the FEC site. It says that I think as of July, you've raised about over $200,000. You told me before the show that number is up to $300,000 or $400,000. So you have raised a decent amount of money for this seat. But one thing that I've noticed throughout my short career covering politics is if you don't get the national groups behind you, your chances of winning go down considerably.
Although it's different in in U.S. House seats, it's not quite so absolute as it is in the Senate.
But I'm saying, like, if the DCCC doesn't provide you with support, it makes your job a lot harder. And what is that? First of all, have you gotten the sense that that's actually the case?
Interesting. Our first challenge in this race was to get people to understand it's not the old Todd Akin district.
Sure.
Okay. That large portions of it were represented by Dick Ebhardt and Russ Carnahan. There are currently 10 Democratic state representative seats that are almost wholly within this congressional. Scott Sifton seats here.
Right.
Jill Shoup ran a very progressive, very, very good campaign in 2014 and beat a name, Jay Ashcroft, in this district. I think what the district would like to have is somebody that will pay attention to them, mm-hmm. That will represent their needs no matter what side of the spectrum they're on, and will earn the taxpayers' money that they're paying a congressional representative.
Well, have there been any debates?
No, and that's fascinating. We have, as you know, Ann Wagner has never debated. She even in her first term, she refused to meet with the Democratic candidate in that district. And no, she's not debated. We have a debate scheduled. It'll be interesting to see whether she's willing to show up. I just think that for somebody who earns $174,000 a year of taxpayers' money, they should take some time to reach out to the voters and explain to them why they vote the way they do and why the policies that they hold.
But I think what's notable about you deciding to run for this is the last two cycles, I think people have run on the Democratic side who are not as well known. Glenn Keenan. I think he was well known in the community, but he was not a known political figure. He had never run for office before. He may very well be very competitive in his state rep race, but it seems like by virtue of you just running for this seat, you have basically forced Ann Wagner to probably run a lot harder than the last two times, potentially, because you are, I think, a legitimate candidate.
Absolutely, absolutely. In 2012, of course, there was a lot of discussion of who would end up in that race. Russ Carnahan was left without a district, ended up, of course, as you know, running in the first district, and eventually left the seat to Glenn Keenan, who didn't even win the primary until the end of August.
Right.
2014, Arthur Lieber ran just to make sure that Ann Wagner didn't run unopposed. We have been working on this for quite some time. It looked to me that if we're going to I think there's a path to victory in this race all the time. No matter what happened nationally, I always thought that the district was underrepresented, and the folks here wanted somebody that understood, as I said, the women's rights issues, gun policy issues, equal pay issues. I think those are important to this district, more than raising money for the party, more than representing the party in Washington, D.C.
I just covered a labor rally a few days ago, and you were among the speakers. You got a strong response. Is labor among your key supporters? How will that play out in the district?
Well, of course, I'm supported by labor. I support labor. I support working families, and it's the way I always put it. And there are very few entities out there right now that are addressing or defending working families like organized labor is. But most of my fundraising has been done within the district, within the metropolitan area, within Missouri. Yes, for PAC money, labor has stepped up and is helping me in that regard. But it's not it's not the biggest portion of the money. We talked to donors from around the country that would like to see the House change to get more Democrats in the House. I always thought that the problem with the Missouri legislature, same as the problem with the U.S. House, is that if you don't have equal numbers, all you do is run chip shot over the minority, and you spend more time working on party policy than you do on what's best for the American people.
Well, let's talk a little bit about issues. If you are elected and unseat Ann Wagner, what would be some things you would want to focus on in Congress? And also keeping in mind that your ability to get things done in the House is going to depend a lot on how many Democrats are there, because it's a very majoritarian structure, essentially. So
sure.
I'm curious to hear what your big issues are.
Well, the one of the big issues here, and it's been in the St. Louis metropolitan area up North County, is the proliferation of this radioactive material that's all over. They've done remarkable work in North St. Louis County to clean this up. It needs to be addressed in the Bridgeton landfill. It needs a safe and permanent solution. I believe in the science. I believe in how this will be decided, but it's languished for too long. It's on virtually on the surface over there in that area. We don't know what harm it's done, folks. Republic Services, who owns the landfill, has started and is coming to agreement with the house owner, settling disagreements with homeowners around the landfill. It is a huge issue, not just for that part of St. Louis, but for the entire district. We can't take the chance of that getting into the water supply, and it hurts the image of the community.
Now, just for our listeners, without belaboring the point too much, I've covered this periodically and actually heavily the last 5-7 years. The bottom line is this radioactive waste was leftovers from World War II bomb production. And I'm very simplifying it, but it ended up being moved over there.
Yes.
In the late 60s, early 70s. And so it's and then it's gotten attention at different times. At different times, it's flared up in the 1980s. For some reason, it got a lot of attention. And then it just died down. Republic is not the original owner. It originally was two different, because there's actually two different things. It's the Westlake and the Bridgeton landfill,
yes.
And they connect each other. And so I don't want to get too much in the weeds. You're welcome to go to our website and read a lot of the stories that have been done by me and others that kind of give you more of a background if you need it. But it is an issue in this race.
I think one of the big issues around that from a congressional level is I think there's a push to change who oversees it. Like, I think right now it's the EPA, and I think that some people want it to be the Army Corps of Engineers.
Well, see, and part of it's overseen by the State Department of Natural Resources.
So
But
I want to hear about what you would want to do.
Yeah,
basically.
You have to understand is that the landfill itself is controlled by Department of Natural Resources as far as staying within statute and the facts of the community.
Right.
The radioactive material in there falls wholly within the parameters of the federal government.
Correct.
And yes, the community wants it moved to the Corps of Engineers because they trust that entity. That's an entity that's in St. Louis County and has been doing the work. It is part of a bill that was filed, and sailed through the Senate, as I might have mentioned earlier. And the fact of the matter is that Ann Wagner never paid attention to the issue until she understood she was going to have an opponent in this race.
Do you think the fact that if you were elected and maybe carried that bill in 2017, do you think you would have an easier time getting it through the House? Because I think it ran into some opposition, probably from the EPA that didn't want to, you know—
Just like any bill. Yeah. Any bill that I'm in a minority in Jefferson City, but I've impacted bills. Mm-hmm. You have to work these bills in the hallways. You have to work them in committee. You have to spend time working on issues that are important to the community. If you don't, they will just languish. The idea of filing a bill and saying I've done my job is ridiculous. You have to work these bills, and I've been very successful in Jefferson City working on issues, trying to modify bills, trying to keep them either less as impactful as they might have been, or to improve them where the point where I actually support them in the long run.
Because that's generally for House Democrats, the best bet for them to impact legislation is working behind the scenes, a committee process, because a lot of Democrats aren't able to get their bills that are sponsored to the
poor. At the end of the day, I know we get so partisan with this stuff, but at the end of the day, we should be looking at what's best for the communities, best for the constituents, and best for the entire country. You can look and see what happened in Flint, where they just spent so much time arguing or trying to discuss what happened until a water supply was completely destroyed. Mm-hmm. So I know we get on a lot of the partisan politics of this, but we should be concentrating on what's best for the community and not whether or not we get reelected.
What are some other issues? Because I know that's going to be a major one, but I know it's not going to be the only one.
A couple of things here that I'm concerned with is protecting Social Security to make Social Security ensure that Social Security is around for our seniors for mm-hmm. decades to come. It is vital, especially with retirement systems. There are less
defined benefit pensions.
Right. Employer retirements. We're leaning that. There's always been a push by Ann Wagner's party to ensure that to get it into the Wall Street. I think that's a terrible idea. I think Medicare is also one of those things that's been on the chopping block for the Republicans for a long time, is to voucher that system out. Those are vitally important. And one of the other big issues we have here, and as a veteran, I certainly understand it, we need to make sure the veterans' care is what it should be for our veterans. We do not have the number of veterans that we had after World War II, but the folks that are going over to overseas to defend us need to know when they come back that they're not going to have to struggle to get care for whatever they've had to deal with overseas, things that you and I would never be able to comprehend. Veterans care is hugely important. My opponent, Ann Wagner, has voted against some of the veterans programs to expand the veterans program and provide them with the need that I think they have.
So obviously one of the big things that will be affecting your potential congressional service is who the president is. And that's obviously taking up a lot of oxygen this cycle. I'm going to take a wild guess that you're not a fan of Trump and you'd probably be more comfortable with Hillary Clinton as president. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I don't think that we've had a presidential candidate in a long time that has the experience and the ability to go in and start working as much as we do right now with Hillary Clinton, without a doubt.
Now, how much do you think the presidential contest will affect your race? Because, I mean, there's always this speculation. I've talked about this many times.
Right.
As far as trickle down. I mean, do you think there's going to be much trickle down? I know that just within the labor movement, you know, there's projections between, depending on how the information gets out, that there could be 30% or more of rank and file labor members who vote for Trump for whatever reason. So, I mean, do you see much trickle down in the second?
Well, as far as actually affecting the race, I guess we'll find that out on November 8th. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Donald Trump and his policies and his approach and his bigoted statements and the things he does, especially against women and minorities and Muslims, where we have a huge Muslim presence in this district. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be supported in this district.
It's interesting because I could see Trump really being unpopular in parts of your district, like Webster Groves, for example, or Kirkwood. But I could also potentially see him popular in traditionally Democratic areas like Jefferson County and South County. I don't know if that means that somebody will vote for Trump and then maybe vote for you or some other Democrats. There's a lot of ticket splitting that goes on in Missouri. And as you said, we aren't going to know the exact dynamics of the presidential race until November 8th, basically.
Sure. Well, as I said earlier, I think the best way for anybody to run for office is go to the front doors and meet the residents. It's all there is to it. It is the way to interact, to understand what their real feelings are and how they see how government should treat them. I run into very little support for Donald Trump at the doors,
right.
Very little. Even at strong Republican homes, they're lost. They realize that somehow they ended up with a candidate that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. And I don't see much support out there. There'll always be support. We have absolute partisan divides in this country, and it's reflected within the voters here. But really, I see very little support for Donald Trump in the area.
I'm asking this question knowing that you're in this to win and you're in this to represent the congressional seat. But it seems by virtue of you running, you're actually being very helpful to statewide candidates. Because in past elections, when they had Democratic candidates that weren't raising a lot of money, that weren't well-known, that weren't giving Ann Wagner or Todd Akin a lot of trouble. I mean, they basically let that congressional district become like a Republican turnout machine. If you're out there and you're turning out more Democratic votes in the second congressional district that typically come out, and maybe enough for you to win, it seems like that helps Chris Koster, Russ Carnahan, and the entire statewide ticket. Have people basically told you that? And is that why maybe some potentially helpful groups or candidates may be getting behind you a little bit more because it helps the entire ticket, essentially?
I've never been it's never been presented to me that I had coattails that I could I could pull in Chris Koster.
Understood.
That is a fascinating approach.
But that was my first, when you entered the race, that was actually the first thing that came to mind, is by virtue of you being in that race and you making it more competitive than usual, it was going to be helpful to the other Democratic candidates that maybe need more votes there.
I entered this race. We looked at this race. Honestly, I'm 60 years old.
Right.
I don't need another career. I'm happily retired. I have a wonderful wife, Kathy, at home waiting for me. And she waits an awful lot, unfortunately, right now. But I ran in this race because I think that the district is not receiving the representation they want or deserve. That's why I got into this. I'm very, very pragmatic. As an air traffic controller, I see how things I want them to be, and I try to direct them to get there. All there is to it. I saw a path to victory in this. I saw that folks were looking for someone to represent their opinions, and I think the opinions are vastly different than my opponent, Ann Wagner. I got into this purely with the understanding that I know how to get things done. I think I've been able to do that in Jefferson City, and I believe I can do that at the federal level. I've made a commitment that, and honoring, although I don't agree with term limits whatsoever mm-hmm. in the state of Missouri, I have made a commitment that if we're successful enough to be elected in November, that I wouldn't stay more than four terms.
Yeah. Do you realize, though, if you win in 2018, 100,000 Republicans will probably run against you?
A fascinating primary, and we'll have to see how that goes. But I'm not looking at another race.
Understood.
I'm not looking at another time.
Mm-hmm.
My goal is to get elected, to work with the constituents, work with the voters, the good people in this district, in the St. Louis and St. Charles counties, and try to ensure that they have a voice in their government.
Well, thank you very much for coming on our show. We really appreciate it. We'll be paying attention to the results of this contest for all of our stories. STLPublicRadio.org. Follow me on Twitter at Jay Rosenbaum. Follow Joe on Twitter at
Jay Manis. That's JManNIES.
And
just for our listeners, Ann Wagner will be has been invited to do a show, too.
And how would we follow you on social media or the internet, basically?
It's BillOtto.org is the website, and it's BillOtto1 on Twitter.
Thank you very much. Until next time, so long. Can you see what you've done to my heart?